a lot of mischaracterizations, John, about exactly what's happening here. And you have to understand, all the bond does is stay the plaintiff, in this case, the state of New York, from enforcing the judgment, which means property seizures, bank accounts, all that stuff. That's all it does. If he didn't post the bond, he still could have pursued the appeal. But then if he won, he would have to like go to New York State and get his stuff back. And you can only imagine what that would be like. So this is a victory for him.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. It's 3/25/24. Big news on the Trump front and big news on the inflation front, as well as a couple of other fronts out there. Crypto, Bitcoin, back over 70,000, shocker of all shockers. And John Rubino is with us now. John, so has the Fed thrown in the towel on inflation?
Hey, Carrie, kind of maybe, because inflation, especially the services part of the CPI, in other words, insurance kinds of things, and healthcare, stuff like that, that's still in the 4% plus range, which is twice the Fed's target range. So that you wouldn't normally think a central bank would cut interest rates in the face of 4% inflation, record stock prices, record house prices, and below 4% unemployment, right? But they're talking about doing it. They kind of intimated three cuts this year. And if they go with that, then monetary policy starts to be easier. At the same time, fiscal policy, in other words, government deficits, is massively stimulative. So you would have the whole government stimulating the economy at a time when, inflation is high and stocks are way up. And so then we're kind of talking about stagflation there because, the economy, despite all those good headline numbers, isn't growing very fast or anything because most people are saddled with a lot of consumer debt, which limits consumer spending. So you would have modestly growing, if growing at all, economy, and inflation at 4% and maybe higher with all the new money coming in, and the government easing even further. So that's the 1970s over again, only, on steroids, because the numbers are also much worse now. We had a pretty good financial system, pretty rock solid back then, because we had relatively little debt in the 1970s. Now we're massively indebted. So take the 1970s kind of conditions, easy money, rising inflation, rising interest rates, that kind of thing, transplant it to today, and you've got a nightmare, something that's just completely unfixable. And that might be kind of where we are now with the Fed talking about easing.
No way out. No way out. Well, one of the indicators that's flashing that what you're saying is correct is look how long gold has been over 2,000 and now over 2,100. And intraday last week, it hit 2,200. So the gold market seems to be agreeing with you.
Yeah, gold is obviously a signal that people are losing faith in the big fiat currencies because driving the price right now is in part central bank buying. The central banks, especially Asian central banks, are buying massive amounts of gold, which implies that they see currency turmoil in the future and they want rock solid assets in their reserves to back up their currency. So that's part of what's pushing gold up. And then on the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which is a physical gold exchange, gold is trading at a premium to where it's trading in London, which is a paper gold exchange, and on the COMEX. So that kind of implies that the physical market is starting to set pricing, which gold bugs have been waiting for this forever. That was the thing that was going to break the Western exchanges and then send gold much higher because the physical price would be a lot higher if physical was allowed to dictate prices. And so we're kind of seeing that too. So At the same time, though, there are lots of other signals of fear and loathing for fiat currencies, because you've got Bitcoin going through the roof. It's at 70,000 as we speak right now. And you've got tech stocks, which are in a lot of cases seen as safe haven assets once they get big enough. You know, everybody assumes Google is untouchable. Therefore, put your money there because it'll be safe. Mm-hmm. Now we've got NVIDIA and basically anything related to AI giving us a dot-com-like bubble. At the same time, big tech is looking like risk-free treasury bonds. You know, everybody's owning them for their safety. So, yeah, you got the conditions for a big pop in inflation, a big pop in interest rates in response to higher inflation, and then a crash for the ages. And that could be the story of this decade, or the first, you know, the next few years, really. It doesn't have to have another decade in which to play out.
So in other news, it looks like Broke Donald, as they're calling our former president, is going to be at least $3 billion richer this week when his social media platform merges through a backdoor merger to basically make him a multi-billionaire if he wasn't already, which I think it was obvious he was. I mean, the opposition always likes to downplay his net worth and all this and say he's just blowing smoke. But, you know, this could be the way where the normies out there exact their revenge. Do you remember when Michael Moore said that this election, you know, Joe Blow, Steve Blow, Bill Blow, and Blow Blow will give the establishment the biggest middle finger in history, and they will elect Donald Trump as president? He predicted it. I knew he was correct at the time. And what happened? It happened. So if every normie out there, if Bill Blow and Joe Blow and Steve Blow and the rest of the Blows out there decide to blow the stock up, what's to stop them from making Trump? Maybe Trump could be, look, if they could make Elon Musk the richest man in the world, maybe they'll make Trump the richest man in the world. Is it possible here, John?
Boy, this story just illustrates so many things. First of all, it illustrates the ineptitude of the current sitting government, because it's like 3 days ago that they decided to give Trump a nickname, Broke Don.
I want to be that broke. Broke as so, Trump.
So 3 days after they roll out that nickname, the guy finds an extra $3 billion out there. Second part of that is, you know, Trump is just incredibly lucky. He's been getting the breaks with all of this stuff. You know, every time somebody gets close to convicting him on something important, they crash and burn in some fundamental way, like down in, you know, the Fannie Willis thing down in Georgia. And as is about to happen with the New York real estate case. So, you know, he's getting the breaks here. Just when it looks bad, he gets some kind of lucky break and he's okay. And now this latest thing, you know, Truth Social is a very tiny social media platform.
It's worthless.
Yeah, it has a few million dollars of revenue. It actually loses money. So it's you know, if it's worth anything, it's worth some small multiple of sales, you know, so 10 million, $20 million, something like that. So for it to be valued at $8 billion or whatever it's going to go public at, means it's another meme stock that that people, you know, people latch onto the idea of it. They buy the stock, they push it way up without any regard to its actual value.
Fundamentals.
And any fundamentals. And so, yeah, you're right. This is two things. One is it's a backdoor way for people to donate to the Trump campaign. And I'm, you know, on Substack, I'm getting a lot of direct messages from people asking that question. Hey, I want to buy Trump's social media stock. How do I do that? You know, and the time is coming when you can do it very easily. So I think, you know, if I'm hearing three or four people a day on my Substack, that means it's 30 or 40 million people across the country thinking about doing something like that. So yeah, it could generate tangible wealth for Trump. Although, you know, when you own the majority stake in a meme stock, you can't get your money out because if you sell it, it'll collapse. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But maybe he can borrow against it, like you said before we went live. Or maybe he is able, because of his relationship with his stockholders, he's able to sell the stock and, in effect, transfer it to them. And that allows him to get the money to pay whatever fines. And that allows him to finance his presidential campaign, the rest of it, because they don't have as much money as the Democrats right now. But
if Trump
says, well, I'll toss $1 billion at this, you know, I have so much money, let me just pay $1 billion on my campaign. And he uses that as a way to brag, which he likes to do about his money. Then all of a sudden, they've got more money than the Democrats. And have you seen any of the pro-Trump and the anti-Biden ads that are floating around?
Oh my God, they're like devastating.
They are
devastating.
There's one that I totally responded to it, but I didn't want to because it was an awful lot like, what was the Hitler's filmmaker?
No,
this was one where it was, we are the strongest people in the world and there is a darkness coming and we will fight. You know, it was one of those, which could have been the rise of Nazi, but I totally responded to it. You know, I was pumped after I saw it. So, so it fits today while being uncomfortably like some things from our past. But there's a bunch of Trump ads like that. And there's one I think might be the best of all. There was a woman on his, I guess it was a TikTok video, who said, well, I just went on Trump's website and here's what he wants to do. And he's going to close down the education department and he's going to build a wall across our southern border. You know, she named all the things he wants to do.
Oh, yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was like any Trump supporter would look at, like, see that and think, okay, that's the man I want, you know. And that's, but that was an actually, that was an anti-Trump video. But it sounded like the perfect pro-Trump ad to people, you know, on our side of the political spectrum. So there's just a lot of them out there. So I don't think the Trump campaign needs an awful lot of money when they've already made the ads that could win the election for him. They just get them out there somehow. So fascinating times. What an election.
We would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that today the Appellate Division First Department of the Supreme Court of the state of New York, and you got to understand the way the courts work there, the structure, I'll explain it briefly, but they basically cut Trump's bond requirement from $454 million to $175 million, and this is being perceived as a win for Trump. So in New York, the trial court is the Supreme Court. The intermediate appellate court is the appellate division. The appellate division has four departments, first being in Manhattan, covers just Manhattan and the Bronx. The second department covers the other boroughs in New York and Long Island and Westchester County and a few upstate counties. Third department's Albany and upstate. Fourth department is like Buffalo and Erie County and the counties adjoining that. So I had a lot of experience in the first department. My company printed up cases on appeal. That was our largest court that we dealt with. I knew the clerks there really well. And the judges, historically, that has been a very hot bench, meaning they actually read the stuff that comes to them, and very competent and very, definitely tilts left, but left with a brain. And kind of like I would call a Second Amendment Democrat. So, but here they cut it. I think Trump really, he could have gotten that other bond, but not in the form of a bond. He would have had to have gotten a letter of credit from a bank. Letter of credit generally is acceptable as security. So a lot of mischaracterizations, John, about exactly what's happening here. And you have to understand, all the bond does is stay the plaintiff, in this case, the state of New York, from enforcing the judgment, which means property seizures, bank accounts, all that stuff. That's all it does. If he didn't post the bond, he still could have pursued the appeal. But then if he won, he would have to like go to New York State and get his stuff back. And you can only imagine what that would be like. So this is a victory for him. Still don't think he can get anyone to post a bond. But what he'll do is basically a letter of credit is what I would anticipate. But the point is, this isn't going to happen. The case, they take 3 to 6 months, sometimes longer, to decide an appeal at the appellate division. So it's very possible that November 5th or whatever, election day, the day after election day, the decision comes down then. My prediction is they can't totally exonerate or absolve Trump. What they'll do is a slap on the wrist, which is $10, $20 million slap on the wrist, pretty much nothing for Trump. And so they can have the judge keep face to some extent, although that's impossibility at this point, but for them to save face, and for Letitia James to save face, to say, well, we got 20 million, so you know, we were on to something, we were right, and we just don't agree with how much. That's what's going to happen in the end here, John. They won't just let him go. They'll appeal it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court won't, you know, it's discretionary what they want to hear. They won't hear the case if it's down to 10 to 20 million. There's just nothing in it for them to do it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think so many of these things are just going to peter out. They'll either be delayed beyond the election, or they'll just kind of fizzle. And then, you know, then it will be an actual election without all this other stuff in it. And that's when the false flag happens. We don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But it's going to be something. Yeah.
Well, we've already got Europe, France, you know, like not your like military superpower, said they're going to send 60,000 troops to Ukraine. I don't know if this is a trial balloon, but if they're sending them, that means England's going to send them for sure, and Germany, and probably Italy, and probably these Eastern European countries like Poland and you know, all the other former Soviet satellites, because they want payback. This is getting tribal now. This is really tribal at this point. For Europe to send troops in there, it's really broken down to the point where whatever the underlying issues were, it's kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys. They killed each other for decades, to the point where the people who are killing themselves not that long ago didn't even know why they were fighting, but they just knew they hated the Hatfields hated the McCoys, and the McCoys hated the Hatfields, and that's what this is about.
Well, Kerry, I would disagree with you on that and say that this is about the aristocracy that runs most of the Western world wanting World War III.
Yeah.
Because they believe there are benefits for them. You know, they've got their end-of-the-world bunkers in New Zealand and everything. They're not really worried themselves about this happening. But they see ways to turn this to their benefit. You know, that's the crisis that allows them to declare martial law. Or that's at least the crisis that allows them to, you know, delay and or steal whatever elections are threatening them. So, yeah, I think they're deeply threatened by the rise of populism, and they want to put a stop to that, you know, and a shooting war with a nuclear power will distract everybody to the point where they're able to get a lot of stuff done, you know, and I think that's the rationale, because, you know, you wouldn't, if you're Poland, you don't want a nuclear war with Russia. That's not a good thing for you.
No.
But if the guys in charge of the economic union of which you're a part order you to do it, maybe you feel like you have to. And, you know, this Macron, oh my God, you know, who's worse, the guy Canada or the guy running France? You know, that would be one for one of those things where they put it up and let you vote, you know, one of those polls, because personally, hard to tell which one is worse.
I always said that containing Russia was really, in the long run, all about containing China, stopping China's growth, stopping them from becoming the hegemon of the New World Order. They weren't going to allow it. And all of what's going on there with their economic collapse, it's all engineered and by design.
I mean, the bloodthirsty people who are running the U.S. government would love to be able to take all the other big pieces off the chessboard. And the idea that doing something that allows them to declare martial law, at the same time it hobbles China to the point where China maybe dissolves, that would be a win-win from their point of view. And they're, in the Ukraine case, they're ignoring 400,000 dead Ukrainians because they really don't care. In China's case, there may be millions or tens of millions die in the process of this, and they still think that would be worth it. So these are evil people, and they are largely in charge. You don't think, Biden is deciding any of this. And so I really worry with the election coming up. I that gives them a deadline, and that's what worries me most, is that they feel like they need to make something happen now, and that when you're under deadline, you tend not to think long term because you got this thing right in front of you that you've got to deal with. And so that's I think the story of the next 6 or so months is what crazy thing is going to happen that changes the current electoral calculus, where one side is likely to win. If they had the election today, it's clear who would win. How do they change that? And what big thing do they implement for that? So I don't know. It whatever they're going to try, it's going to be very scary. And you know what? We haven't had our cyber attack yet that we've been waiting for all this time. So it could easily be just something that shuts down the banking system for a little while. And then,
that would be nice.
We can't change horses in the middle of a financial crisis stream. That kind of thing. That would be the sales pitch.
Yeah, well, I guess they have a point. I agree with you. It's all the elites who are choreographing, orchestrating everything that's happening. And, Putin is not exactly a sympathetic character. He just looks like a killer, a stone cold killer.
They never are. That's part of the whole central casting aspect of this. They picked the guys that were scariest. Because remember, it was Saddam Hussein for a long time. He looked like a monster. And then came Assad, who's a very scary guy in Syria. He was the great Satan. And somewhere along the line, there was Muammar Gaddafi, too.
And then Trump.
Scary.
And then Trump came, is the great Satan.
Yeah, and then came Trump. Well, then now there's a partnership between Trump and Putin in the minds of the guys who are manipulating public opinion.
We all know Trump is a Russian double agent, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Putin was the next Hitler, and they decided they were going to tie Trump to Hitler. And, I think it's understood now, right? Is it that Hillary Clinton, her campaign created the Steele dossier?
Oh, yeah. There's no question.
Brought it to the FBI and lied to the FBI about it. So they engineered this whole thing, but that was part of it. Russia, Putin was a guy that Hillary Clinton disliked deeply. And so was Trump. So tying them together was a really nice piece of political jujitsu from their point of view. I'm sure they're very proud of that idea, whoever came up with it. But it didn't completely work. Putin is winning the Ukraine war, and Trump is ahead in this election. So now what? That's the question. What horrendous thing is going to happen that changes all of that? And I shudder to think what it would be, because it's got to be something pretty big at this point in the process.
It sounds like it's a doubleheader there for the commies. You got Trump and Putin, the nightmare scenario. And you got to figure, I don't know if Trump's really vindictive or not. His first term, he just wanted to work with the deep state, and you let me do my thing, I let you do yours. But now, after all that's transpired, I got to believe he's going in there with a wrecking ball, and they know it, and they're none too thrilled about it.
Well, that's got to be part of what's motivating the deep state. And because, they're thinking about what they would do, right? And they would come in, and if they were given the power to do it, they would just eliminate everybody who disagreed with them one way or another. And so they're looking at Trump and thinking, wow, if he gets a legislative majority and wins the presidency, he's going to come after us, So he's got a challenge to control that impulse, because what we don't want is for the U.S. to become a banana republic where it's normal for the winner in every election to purge all of their opponents. So if he's going to do this right, he's got to go after the people who really, truly deserved what they're going to get, and where there's evidence that's absolutely incontrovertible. Okay. None of this made up stuff. And that's not everybody. That's relatively few. You could probably convict Hillary Clinton of a political crime over the Steele dossier.
Statutes are run for Hillary.
Too bad, because that is one that looks legit from a legal standpoint. Trump, if he wants to confound everybody, will come out and be a statesman, where he doesn't stage show trials or anything, and he doesn't go out there and try to destroy lives. And he does the stuff he got elected to do. He builds that wall. He rounds up all the illegals and puts them back in Mexico so they can get in line and come in legally. He does those things, and brings jobs back from China, stuff like that.
Yeah.
The things that his people really want. Yes, he would be, and this is a bizarre thing for me to say, he would go down in history as a great statesman. Can you imagine Donald Trump, being one of history's great statesmen? But, if he does it right, he has a chance here to do something like that, where people look back at what he could have done and see what he actually did do. Mm-hmm. And they're actually impressed, So that's his opportunity.
All right. Well, hey, I think we got a couple other. I think we've covered enough for now. I think we will leave it at that. Make sure you go over to John's Substack, rubino.substack.com. Visit our other site, our sister site, inflation.cafe. And of course, make sure you go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for a free newsletter if you haven't already. John, we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Any questions or comments, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Feel free to leave ample comments on the YouTube channel. John, talk to you in a couple of weeks.
See you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.